all across America and around the world. You're listening to America's number one radio program for veterans, Veterans Radio. And now, live from the studios of WDEO in beautiful Ann Arbor, Michigan, here's your host for today's program, former Chief Warrant Officer, helicopter pilot with the 195th Assault Helicopter Company, Republic of Vietnam, 1969, Dale Throneberry.
And good morning, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. As our good friend Matt Durr introduced me, thank you so very much, Matt. My name is Dale Throneberry, and I did have the privilege of flying with the 195th Assault Helicopter Company in Vietnam. The Sky Chiefs, good morning to all you Sky Chiefs and Thunder Chickens out there that are listening. You're listening to Veterans Radio, and we're very, very excited to have you here listening to us this morning, in a, as Matt pointed out, in beautiful downtown Ann Arbor. Matt Durr is going to be running our board today. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning.
And running our webcam, for those of you that are interested in, I don't know why you would want to do this, but to see what we look like, Gary Lilly is running that, the former CB. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, CB. Can do.
We hope so. We've got a lot of interesting things, and we're going to start right off today. We're going to be, many of you may remember, I was in Pittsburgh a couple of weeks ago at the Military Writers Society, and was privileged to meet an incredible amount of authors, songwriters, poets, artists. It's an amazing collection of very, very talented people. And one award that we were not able to give out that particular night was the Founders Award. And joining me right now on Veterans Radio is the founder of the Military Writers Society of America, and that is Bill McDonald. And Bill, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, top of the morning to you, young man.
Top of the morning to you, a very early morning out there in California.
Yeah, it's, the sun ain't even up yet. I'm in the hills of Los Angeles on my way to Pacific Palisades to a spiritual retreat, and it's nice we connect this morning.
It is great to talk to you, Bill. I know that you weren't able to make the conference, but tell me a little bit, just briefly, of how you came up with the idea for this organization.
Well, a number of years ago, I've been working with PTSD veterans, and I was asked by the Veterans Administration, since I've been working about three decades with veterans, to come up with a program to help them, and it involved working with people in Kalamazoo, believe it or not, and the Detroit area, on a what we called the art of healing. And we used writing memoirs, writing poetry, painting, sculpting, writing music, playing music, singing, all the arts that we took into consideration as a way for people to have some kind of therapy where they could get a grip and a handle on what they've been through. And we found it very successful, and I developed a program. We did a movie for public television, which was played in the Great Lakes, and for Armed Forces Television Network, Pentagon Television Network. And that kind of started. I started with about a group of about 12 writers, officially. And our first public appearance as a group for the military writers was in Austin, Texas, at the premiere of the documentary film In the Shadow of the Blade, which you may be familiar with.
Right, yes.
Which deals with a helicopter going 10,000 miles across country and kind of a welcome home party. And that small group expanded to today, it's less than 1,000, but it's someplace between 800 and 1,000. And my idea was to open the door to all veterans, and even non-veterans if they had a patriotic theme, where they could come together in a collective group creatively and display their works and talk to people of like mind. So therefore, memoirs, poetry, and then novels, and all kinds of stuff started flowing forth. And then we've become that great big organization that we are now. And believe it or not, the Military Writers has a reputation in Asia and Europe, and even it's widely read in India, of all places. I know because I just was there for 100 days this year. So it's really expanded, and it's reached the levels that I wanted it to. I wanted a place for people to come together for fellowship, but also for them to hone their craft and to be recognized through awards, which is what we're doing now with this Uncommon Valor.
Right, and that's the point that we have you on this morning, Bill, is to bestow upon the authors of Uncommon Valor the Founders Award, and right now we've got Dwight Zimmerman on the line. Dwight, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale. It's a pleasure to be here again.
It is a pleasure. It's nice to talk to you. It's nice to see you a couple of weeks ago also. We had Dwight and John on back in May to talk about Uncommon Valor. Unfortunately, I had my little emergency on that day, so I didn't get to do that. But so now, John, Bill, I'll bring it back to you and let you tell people about the Founders Award for Uncommon Valor.
Yeah, first off, the Founders Award for the Military Writers Society is the top award. There is no award higher. It's the most prestigious award. And if a book is not good enough, and I go through thousands a year, then I don't give the award. In fact, this year I was at that position where I wasn't looking at anybody getting the award, and there were some great books out, I mean really good books, but they weren't at that level that I was looking for. Until I read Uncommon Valor, and as soon as I read that, I sent a message out and said, this is it. This has to be recognized. Not only is the book very well written, I mean, it's entertaining, it's also a resource guide and background on the history of these individuals in Iraq and Afghanistan, these six warriors who are in the medal. There's also a history of the award itself and the politics involved into it and what the award's all about. It's a fascinating study of human nature, of battle, of valor, of heroes, and you find out the common ground is there is no common ground. These are all a bunch of different individuals and as unique as a snowflake. And that's what makes the book that much more enthralling. I mean, it's literally a book that you can pick up and read nonstop. I mean, it's also a book I'm finding this morning as I'm sitting here waiting, as I'm going through it another time after reading it initially, there's things I'm rediscovering. I mean, there was real subtle things in the book that you read it, but then you go, wow, that's really kind of neat. So it's one of those books of the kind that you can read over and over again and share. And it's obviously a work of love and joy by the authors. I mean, Dwight Zimmerman and John Grisham have really put together, it can only be described as a masterpiece. It's, you know, a lot of people out there that aren't military, this is a good book for them. It's not just for military-minded people. People like to read military genre. This is about human interest. I mean, it talks about these guys when they were growing up and their family life and what the battles were like and what emotions they went through and the politics and probably some of the things that might interest some people when they talk about General Douglas MacArthur and how he got his award and the politics involved in that and the politics of Charles Lindbergh flying across the Pacific Atlantic and getting his award. So it's a really phenomenal book. Written very well. The prose in this thing is it flows, it makes sense, the research is outstanding, and plenty of footnotes for people to go back to if they want to do more.
It's going to be a great
I can't say enough about it.
I understand. I've read it myself more than once. It's called Uncommon Valor. It's by Dwight Zimmerman and John Grisham. We weren't able to contact John this morning, but Dwight, I'm only going to be able to give you about a minute and a half to talk about your journey in writing this book.
Well, actually, I'd like to let Mr. McDonald, you know, continue talking. I loved your...
It makes your day, doesn't it?
Oh, boy, I tell you. Excuse me. Well, John and I are both non-veterans, and so one of the things that we feel very... is very uppermost in our mind is that we really work hard to tell the story in a, not just Uncommon Valor. You know, we've done other pieces, obviously, to act as a bridge between both the military communities and the civilian community to help particularly civilians understand what it's like. Mm-hmm. With Uncommon Valor, we had the additional burden of talking about or writing about these extraordinary men, young men actually, and to be honest and true to what they did, and certainly since in all cases these were posthumous, you really had to make sure that you did right by these people. What was so fascinating was that the diverse backgrounds On one side, you had a kid from a broken home, never knew his biological father, abandoned by his mother. And then on the other side, you had someone who grew up in a stable middle-class, upper-middle-class family, graduated from an Ivy League college, and had the potential of becoming a hotshot lawyer. Instead, he decided to become a SEAL. Their only common link is that they all had a desire to serve their country, and then ultimately, of course, they won the Medal of Honor.
Right.
It was tough to try and make sure that you, you know, did right by these guys, and that we got the Founders Award. Talk about being blindsided by a Mack truck. John and I were just absolutely stunned.
It's a nice truck to get hit by in that case for the Founders Award. We are talking with Dwight Zimmerman and also Bill McDonald from the Military Writers Society of America. So for people that want to know more about the book is Uncommon Valor. You can get it at Amazon, Borders, Barnes & Noble. Actually, you can go on to the Military Writers website, which is militarywriters.com, and you can find out all kinds of information. If you want to know more about the conversation that Dwight had with the Veterans Radio crew, you can go back to, I believe it's the end of May was the program, and it's in our archives, and you can hear the whole thing. Gentlemen, I want to thank both of you so very much for being on Veterans Radio today, and congratulations to Dwight and John. And Bill, I'm glad you're feeling so much better, and hope to see you next year wherever the conference is.
I hope to be there. Hope to be alive.
Yeah, I know. Thank you both so very much for being on Veterans Radio.
Thank you.
We're going to do our little welcome home segment in just a second, but first I want to remind everybody that during the next segment of the program, we've got another Military Writers Society Award winner coming up, and his name is Father Ron Moses Camarda, and he wrote an incredible a book that I find. It's called Tear in the Desert, and it's about his experience as a chaplain at a MASH hospital unit near Fallujah in 2004 and 5. And I think that you're going to find this a fascinating story, and I encourage you to stay tuned to listen to that interview. It's a great story of his experiences working in a hospital over there. Each week on Veterans Radio, we welcome home servicemen and women who have been stationed around the world in the service of our country, and we do this to let them know that we honor their service and commitment to our country. This week, we don't have any specific units that we're going to welcome home, but we are going to welcome home all of those men and women who have served overseas in Iraq and Afghanistan and anywhere else in the world. Thank God for what you do. We could not exist without your protection, and we want to thank you so very much. And so on behalf of a grateful nation and Veterans Radio, we want to say welcome home.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill. The benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu. Or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Back on Veterans Radio, and joining me on the air right now is Father Ron Moses Camarda, who's the author of a book entitled Tear in the Desert. And Father Ron, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Oh, Dale, it's great to be here with you.
It's pretty exciting stuff, isn't it, what's going on the radio today?
Life is great.
Life is great. You are also an award winner with the Military Writers Society, and I had the honor of meeting you in Pittsburgh a couple of weeks ago, and you were kind enough to give me a copy of your book, and in all honesty, I could not put it down. You have told an amazing story, and we're going to talk about it a little bit today. We don't want to give the whole thing away, but tell me how you became, first of all, how you became a priest. I thought that was a fascinating story.
Actually, I went to the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy in Kings Point, New York, and while I was there, we sail 6 months a year out on the ships, and then while I was there, I fell in love with this young lady, and a beautiful woman, and when I was getting ready to graduate, instead of sailing on merchant ships, I took a job with the U.S. Coast Guard, and when I took the job in Jacksonville, Florida, close to where I grew up in Daytona Beach, and as soon as I got down here, I usually just say, well, she dumped me.
Cruel.
That's not what it is, really. It's more like that's what God was calling me to, and I just didn't know what God was calling me to. So I, 3 years later, I applied, and I went to the seminary from the Coast Guard. I got out on August 24th, and August 25th, I was in the seminary at St. Minerad, Indiana, for a year. And then the following year, I always said to God, I'll give you 2 years. Because God said to me, I'm not going to tell you if you're going to be a priest. He just wanted me to go into the seminary.
Mm-hmm.
And after the 2 years, I was almost like I didn't want to return. But it was like a five-year program. And I got like 6 years for good behavior. But when I was ordained in 1990, I had already switched over from the Coast Guard Reserves to the Navy Chaplain Candidate Reserve Program. So in 1991, I became a full chaplain, but I kind of delayed putting my papers in because the Gulf War was going on, and I didn't want to go to the Middle East.
Okay, reluctant warrior.
So I, 3 years after being ordained, Bishop Snyder, the bishop who ordained me, called me in the office and said, I'd like you to go active duty. And I said, no, I don't want to go active duty. He says, but I want you to go.
Yes, sir.
You know how obedience is. But he asked me, like, Ron, why don't you want to go? I said, well, they always put the new priests with the Marines. And in this case, I know it's going to be Okinawa, Japan, and they go out in the field a lot. And the bishop said, what's wrong with that? I said, Bishop, my idea of roughing it is a Motel 6 rather than a Hyatt Regency. He said, get out of my office. You're going. And he smiled. And I went out to, in 1994, for a year and a half, I was with the Marines in Okinawa. And they asked me if I wanted the air side or the grunts. And I said, let me swing with the wing. So they put me with the Stinger battery. And if any Marines are listening, they know that that's the grunts of the air.
Right. They know
and
that.
And then I followed, and about a year and a half later, they asked me where I wanted to go. And I said, how about Puerto Rico? And they said, why Puerto Rico? I said, because there's no Marines there. The Marines, I love them. But once I got to Puerto Rico, I was there for less than a month. I was on vacation, and they gave me orders to go to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, during the Cuban operation in 1995. There were 10,000 Cubans and 10,000 Haitians, refugees. And I ended up baptizing 28 Cuban refugees, full immersion, the CBs and everybody. It was just a beautiful occasion. And I returned 3 months later to Puerto Rico, and I got passed over for lieutenant commander. And they said, since you got passed over twice, you have to get out. But you're a priest, so you can stay. I said, well, I don't want to stay. So I left, and I stayed with the reserves, the VTU, and a year later they promoted me anyways to lieutenant commander.
Oh.
By that time, I was out for 7 years. I was a pastor at St. Patrick's on the north side of Jacksonville. It's an inner-city parish. And we were doing some marvelous things, and I got a phone call from New Orleans that said to me, it was a captain, it was at the time the reserve unit in New Orleans, this is before Katrina, in 2004, July 5th, I'd qualified for 20 good years in the reserves. I get this phone call and says, Padre, do you have experience with Marines? I said, no. And then they said, pack your bags, you're going to Fallujah, Iraq.
Oh, my.
I said, you are, no way. This is a joke. And he says, no, this is serious. We need someone over there. I says, listen, I can't go. I'm 45 years old. I can qualify to retire. They said, well, but did you put your papers in? I said, no.
You've been extended.
Actually, you have to submit for it. And so now I'm retired reserves eventually. But what they then they said, I said, listen, I have season tickets to the NFL Jaguar games with my dad. They said, now that's good, but that won't work. And then then I said, well, what if I had my bishop remove my endorsement? Because as a chaplain, I have to be endorsed by my bishop. It's like being licensed.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, two priests have already done that. And I said, thank you. And I said, goodbye. I hung up the phone, didn't tell a soul. On July 15th, I got orders to report the first week of August, 2 weeks later. And I took the orders, and I walked over to the church, and I placed my orders on the altar, and I said, Jesus, I know you don't want me to go, so I'm going to ask the bishop to remove my endorsement. I know you need me here to work in this parish, not for any glory or anything. And it was like Jesus caught my bluff, and that internal voice like tapped me on the shoulder and said, Ron, I want you to go. I said, no, you don't. Yes, I do. No, you don't. And I was struggling. I said, you can't be serious. And he said, Ron Moses, which is my confirmation name, my grandfather's name. And I said, you can't send me. I complain too much. And Jesus said, yep, you do. So he put it in my heart that I was supposed to go. I even said, well, send the other two priests. He said, no, I need you. And I didn't know what this was all about. The typical with the call that most of us have. Sometimes we resist things and some of the most beautiful things happen.
Mm-hmm.
So then I ended up in Fallujah, Iraq.
And who were you with over there?
I was with the Bravo Surgical Unit, which was a Marine unit, which was, it's sort of like MASH. Okay, if anyone knows the television show or the movie MASH, I was just like Father Mulcahy. There was about 100 of us. The first 50 went over I went over on September 2nd, and then we went all the way through Al-Takadam, then went through just a horrific journey, I tell you. They were shooting us as we were landing. That gives you an idea. On a C-130. And then we were in the convoy, which the first convoy for anyone is just so horrible. And I think that's part of what the book actually helps a little bit for family members. When we go through it, once you get through it, then you get used to it.
Right.
Family never gets used to the dangers that are implying for those that they love. The Marine Bravo Surgical includes about 20 Marines, and then there's doctors, surgeons, nurses. We have a combat stress team, and I was the only Catholic priest on the Camp Fallujah, which had about over 10,000 people at the height of the Fallujah, the battle for Fallujah. This was shortly after the Abu Ghraib incident. In fact, I actually had an opportunity to go over there in October of 2004. So I was actually in Camp Fallujah, and everybody knew that I wasn't going off anywhere. So my family did, but then they started asking me to go out into the city, especially during the battle for Fallujah. And I said at first, no, 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 and I was complaining a lot. So from September 6th until December 23rd, we had casualties every single day, from IEDs, amputations, shrapnel to all parts of the bodies. And what I started doing is I have this little green notebook that I started writing the names of all the people there. There was over 2,000 names that I had written in there, 1,500 casualties in my 7 months over there, and 81 deaths, in which 12 died in front of me.
Well, I want to get to that. I want to tell our audience again, we're talking with Father Ron Moses Cromartie, who's the author of Tear in the Desert, which is taken from his journal that we were just mentioning here on Veterans Radio. And Father Ron, I want you to talk a little bit about what it was like with all those casualties coming in, because in your previous life as a priest, you weren't exposed to that kind of horrific damage to a human being.
Exactly. I found a a journal entry that I had written after I had returned, that I was sitting back reflecting, and I wrote, in a sense, each tear that I witnessed in the desert was in a sense my tear. I'm incapable, like God, to experience the tear as a gift. I was crying also. I struggle. The heart of some was pierced and drained. The only relief would or could be the creator of blood and heart. My being was parched. Only one drop, one tear, would be needed to flood the dryness and emptiness. And with that rejuvenation, as in all storms, there is a genuine danger. As we take in tear in the desert, there is a blessing and a grave danger. In the storm, Jesus is coming to you. Don't be afraid. He is your love and source of being. Don't be afraid. And go to him. Walk on the flood of tears and don't look away. Have faith, and if you do, receive his hand. And Jesus will grab me and say, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? And move on. Focus on Jesus, follow him through the tear. As the people followed Moses, only the desert is blooming and flowing with life eternal. While I was over there, when the people would come in, the first thing that I did, I said, okay, buddy, the Marines are stripped down. As soon as they come into Bravo Surgical, I have a bodyguard that was with me. We were like the religious ministry team.
Mm-hmm.
So Patrick was a Methodist, and he was from Ohio State, had twin boys that were about 5 years old and a little daughter about nine. And he was supposed to defend me. I'm the only military people, chaplains are the only ones without a weapon out there. And he said, so he would strip them down. We'd look at the dog tags, look and find out what their faith would be if we knew anything. Sometimes I would just have to ask them because maybe their dog tag said no preference. Like the Jewish people always put no preference because you don't want that on your dog tags if you get caught.
Right.
So when they would come in, I would say, okay, buddy, breathe in through your nose and exhale. And they're all like shaking, and they were trying to get the morphine, and the nurses and the doctors, at first I didn't know what I was doing there. So I said, breathe in and breathe out. And if you can ask to everybody, ask, just look, if everybody of your listeners would just do that, if everyone, please just breathe in through your nose really deeply and exhale through your mouth.
I feel much better already.
Yeah, it's just amazing calmness. And that's about all I did. I was teaching people how to breathe. It's sort of like when you're lifting weights. Sometimes mm-hmm. you need someone to remind you, breathe. You can lift some more. So I said, breathe in and breathe out. And one time, this Marine, he was 19 years old, you know, shaking a little. I mean, we had to get him over to the surgery. And I said, Marine, I want you to breathe in and breathe out. And he looked at me and says, Padre, I'm not Catholic. I says, you're not? What are you? He says, I'm non-denominational. I says, what the hell does that mean? Do you believe in Jesus? Because I believe in Jesus. I'll breathe in Jesus and exhale crap. We just got to get you calmed down so we can get you over to the surgery. And he looks at me and he breathes in and he says, Padre, it works. And we got the morphine into him and sent him off.
That's a great story. And we're going to be taking a break. I'm going to ask you to hold on to that. We're talking with Father Ron Moses Camardi, the author of Tear in the Desert. It's something that all of you need to read. It's got some great stories in there. And as you just read earlier, it sounds like you were writing letters to God or writing letters to yourself. We'll be right back after this message.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Specialist Roz McGinnis threw his back against a grenade thrown into his Humvee, saving the lives of his crewmates. Details after this. December 4th, 2006, McGinnis was manning the turret in the last Humvee of a six-vehicle patrol in northeast Baghdad when an insurgent threw a grenade from the roof of a nearby building. As he stood up to get ready to jump out of the vehicle, as he'd been trained to do, officials say McGinnis realized the other four soldiers in the vehicle did not know where the grenade had landed and did not have enough time to escape. He threw his back against the radio mount and smothered the explosive with his body. McGinnis was killed instantly, while the other four men survived. He was awarded the Medal of Honor posthumously by President Bush on June 2nd, 2008. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
And we are back on Veterans Radio, and we're talking with Father Ron Moses Camardi, author of Tear in the Desert. That music that you just heard, kind of overlapping something, is from his television program that was based on the book. Isn't that true, Father Ron?
Yes, it is. It's a 30-minute television special that was done by the director who's we're actually in the process of making the book into a movie. It's just a story that to get out for the Marine stuff. W. Keith Moore wrote the music for it. He actually wrote music for all of it. And if you ever get a chance to hear his music, he's just phenomenal, has a great depth of the understanding. In fact, he does some great work with our soldiers and troops out there. He sends out music for them.
Well, I want people to get the opportunity. You had mentioned that the television program had already been on ETWN Network.
EWTN, yeah.
Right. And that it was coming up again on Veterans Day or the weekend of Veterans Day?
Yes, I believe it is going to be on. I don't know exactly the time. I think it's about 6 p.m. on Veterans Day that they're going to rebroadcast it. It was once on Catholic Television Boston, and it also is like a few clips on my website.
Right. I was just going to tell everybody they need to go to tearinthedesert.com. That's tearinthedesert.com, and Father Ron has got a great bunch of information on there, including some segments from the program, and I think you'll find it very interesting. As I mentioned, we are talking with Father Ron Camarda, who's the author of Tear in the Desert. And if you'd like to get in and ask him a question, please feel free to give us a call here at Veterans Radio. The number is 877-573-7825. That's 877-573-7825. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the Battle of Fallujah. You get into that in the book where you're, as I mentioned earlier, you sounded a little bit like a reluctant warrior. But once you got there, you went out and you were performing mass for anybody and everybody who would come, weren't you?
Yeah, sometimes I would like celebrate Mass 19 times, especially like at Christmas time, and go to little places 3 times or 200 at the base. And it was just as a ministry of the anointing of the sick, which is a Catholic sacrament for people. About 40% of the people out there are actually Catholic. Some of them struggle, you know. But a lot of times when you're really injured, it really changes when you come in, especially when you're recovering. But I'll tell you the story that makes Tear in the Desert and why this whole thing happened. I think I can celebrate pretty much. It was November 12th, actually, and November 11th here because of the time zone. But I was just with two Marines. One died in front of me, and I eventually found out that one died 6 months later. But I was going back and forth in the trauma. And it was just, I had been talking to them, to this one guy, Gene, and then I experienced his death. And, oh, wonderful guys. I mean, I get the last minute of their lives, practically, and then I find out later, and get in contact with their families when I return, mothers, wives, even the children. And what happened is, and you can, even with the pictures you see there, you get an idea of the actual Bravo Surgical, but I was woken up early in the morning after I'd been out till about 1 in the dorm, and the guys from Mortuary Affairs, which was right close by, came in and tapped me on the shoulder among all the guys I was sleeping with and said, "Padre, we have another angel," which is someone who has died, and asked me if I would come over quickly. And I said, "Where's your chaplain?" Like 5:30 in the morning. They said, "We can't find him." And it was for various reasons. But anyways, I got up quickly, and I hadn't showered in 4 days, so I put my backpack on to go to the showers, which were about 50 meters away. And just as I was going to do that, I went over to Mortuary Affairs, go inside, and there was this young man, Jonathan Shields. He was ruddy, he was handsome, he was Baptist, but the only thing is he was dead. And I just was right with him, right there, and as soon as I folded my hands, all the Marines, with their tattoos and their struggles, because I had known them a little bit, they folded their hands and just wanted me to pray with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically prayed. I said, "God, please be with the family, his family. He's Baptist." And so on the cross, Jesus said, "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they do. And today you'll be with me in paradise. And as you welcome this man into eternity, we ask that you bless his family and those people who will be struggling after this." And then I just started singing, "Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound. It saved and set me free." And then I saw his soul rise. It was absolutely amazing. It was like the room filled with angels, and it's hard to explain. And I'm sure people can doubt what I was experiencing, but it was so beautiful. It was, you know, once someone's about to die, it's the most beautiful thing in the world. It's also the poorest person in the world because they can't breathe. It doesn't matter how much money you have. Once you can't breathe anymore, then you leave. And then I was filled with great joy, and I walk outside, and then the weight of the world came back on to me. And then I walked down the 50 meters to the showers, and as I was just getting ready to put shaving cream on my face, the door opened, and it's no one else around, but the commanding officer came in and says, "Padre, you got to come quick to the trauma. We're losing another one."
Oh.
And the door slammed, and all I could think of, I just want to go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
I had 28 deaths already and countless trauma, and it was in the middle of the battle for Fallujah. And I just said, I just want to go to bed. And I took the shaving gear out, and I'm not proud of it, but I started shaving slower than I've ever shaved before in my entire life. And when I finished shaving, I didn't shower, but had I not taken this delay, the rest of this story doesn't happen. I wouldn't be talking to you, Dale. That's how amazing, and so it's by a thread. I walk back to the hospital where I've seen bombs hit the hospital once coming out of the head, and all I could say was, thank God I took a dump. But when I got there, I went inside and went down the hallway, and I was too late, so I had to go into the, and I got shoved down the hallway, and we didn't have enough corpsmen because we'd been depleted because of everything. And they started giving me orders, Padre, hold the blood, squeeze out the plasma. They shoved me into the operating room. They pulled out an 11-inch cylindrical rocket mortar that had lodged in his abdomen.
Ooh.
I said, how did this guy last this long? Why? And I knew that he was conscious when he came in, but he was out. And I helped put him up on the gurney, and I just outstretched him on the table. He looked like Jesus. And then they slid him open, and I could see his heart pumping and everything inside. And I'm cramming myself up against the wall, and the nurse yells out, he's Catholic, and I can't think of any of the prayers. I mean, it was amazing. I could not think of any prayer whatsoever, not even the Hail Mary. And I'm just like, if I could get out of there, I would. I was just amazing. And then they looked at me, and they said, my agnostic roommate, surgeon, he yells at me. He goes, Padre, set up the light. And I'm like ignoring him, and he says, Padre, please set up the light. And I said, and then he looked at me, and he said, Padre, you're standing on it. So I had to get off this big light, and I brought the light to the table, and all of a sudden I felt like I could get a prayer like a basket. I would be like, I could be the professional prayer, get out, do my duty, have another notch on things. But just as I was feeling that comfort, and I was about to do it, both of the surgeons looked at me and said, Padre, we can't do anything, it's up to you. And they just walked out of the room. Blood everywhere. It was a pool of blood on the floor, on it, all over his body. The only place he didn't have blood was on his face. He had tattoos and everything. He had red, tight hair, and he was an Army soldier. His name was Edward, and I just started brushing his hair, and I said, Edward, you're dying. And unless there's a miracle, it's right here. And I don't see that kind of a miracle, I'll be your family. And I said, when Jesus was on the cross, he just said seven things. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Today you'll be with me in paradise. And when I got to that point, it was just the thief said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And then the thief says, and then Jesus says to the thief, today you'll be with me in paradise. And I looked at him and I just, you know, Edward, I am sick and tired of this war. I'm jealous of you. I mean, you're going to be in heaven, and I don't want to be here anymore. I want to go with you. I'm jealous. But don't just go to the light. Don't be afraid. I'll let your family know everything. And so as I was praying, and then I didn't know what to do. He was just there breathing, you know, breathing in and out on his own. And I turned to the, I just looked at him and I said, I'm going to sing to you what I sang to my mother when she was dying. And it's a song of birth. And it's a song that people hear all the time. But when my mother was dying, we sang this to her. So I started singing, Oh, Holy Night. The stars are brightly shining, it is the night of our dear Savior's birth. And I'm feeling unconscious, self-conscious, because the Marines are all there, and Army and stuff. Long lay the world in sin and error pining, till he appeared, and the soul fell felt its worth, a thrill of hope. And as I said, a weary world rejoices, a tear came squirting out of his left eye, traveled down and froze on his face. I swear, Dale, I could hear the sound of that tear, and that's when I stopped complaining. That's when I knew that God needed me to just come and just witness a tear. That's all I do. I mean, people have lots of things to do in their lives or special things, but all I was supposed to do is experience this tear. And then I was just, I could, the angels were in the room. It was just absolutely heavenly. And I finished the song, Fall on Your Knees, and when I was just finished with the song, I'm praying. I did the anointing of the sick on his forehead. I said, through this holy anointing, may the Lord, in his love and mercy, save you and raise you up. And I did it on his hands that were bloody. And it was like, when I finished that, I'm just there. He's just breathing. And I thought, like, well, what do I do? Just wait for him to die, I guess. And then I got this, like, tap on my shoulder again, and it was, Jesus said to me, Ron, tell him you love him. I said, I ain't telling him that. Ron, please. No, I can't do that. Ron Moses, you've got to. I says, I can't. He says, well, do you believe it? I says, yes, I do. The problem is, Jesus, if I do that, I can't function out here anymore. I can't minister to anybody else because my heart will be absolutely crushed. I cannot do this. Ron, please. Ron Moses. I said, oh, my God. And I looked at Edward, and I said, Edward, I love you. I leaned over, and I kissed him on the forehead. There was a flash of light, and he was gone.
We'll be right back after this. We're back on Veterans Radio, and we're talking with Navy chaplain retired, Father Ron Moses Camarda. And Father Ron, I hope our listeners will go into our archives and listen to that last segment, because I couldn't stop. I didn't want to stop you, and I didn't even want to take a commercial break, but we had to, unfortunately.
You know what was so good about that, Dale?
Yes?
I'm sitting here, I'm shaking a little bit, but that was the silence. That sometimes I go ahead, you just try, I think we get nervous with that silence, and when mm-hmm. Edward died, that was such a beautiful moment to cherish. And we, in our society with so much information, so much things going on, sometimes we just need to take the time to just be silent. And I think that's even why TAPS is such a moving experience every night. The military has that, but it's just a quiet time for us to say, wow, just be filled with gratitude for life itself, mm-hmm. with all its ups and downs, good times, bad times, sickness and in health.
I was trying to find in your book, there was a segment there where you were talking about a Marine memorial service. And I remember... And I
thought about that one. I actually have it right in front of me.
Okay, this is the one where they call out the names.
Yeah, can I share it with you?
Yes, please do.
I'll
people
just read it right.
Get the Kleenex out.
So moving. 15 October 2004. On October 12th, the mortar killed a Marine who arrived in Iraq less than a month ago. The memorial service was today at 4 p.m. I attended the service to support the Marines who knew him. Oscar was only 19 years old. When Oscar's mother was struck with cancer, he became the man of the house. He cared for his younger siblings. The Marine Corps likely provided the strength and discipline Oscar might have lacked in his family of origin. I gleaned a few things about Oscar from his friends who spoke at the memorial service. Oscar smiled, laughed, and thoroughly enjoyed the life given to him, but now his life was abruptly ended. Over 300 Marines gathered to show gratitude for Oscar's sacrifice. In many ways, the whole ceremony reminded me of Good Friday services when we remember the death of Jesus of Nazareth. The scripture at the memorial service was the book of Koheleth, Ecclesiastes, and spoke of vanity of vanities, in which there is a time for everything, including a time to be born and a time to die. The gospel spoke of the many houses God will provide, one for each of us. Jesus loves us and assures us. A huge Marine Corps flag, approximately 30 feet by 20, draped the stage. The flag has a red background and a globe with an anchor in the center. Above the globe, an eagle touts, Semper Fidelis. Underneath this motto is a banner of the United States Marine Corps. There were also seven Marine Corps flags and one U.S. Navy flag on stands that fanned out. At the stage's center was the cross equivalent. There was no body. Oscar's boots were there. His rifle also stood beside the boots and supported his helmet and dangling dog tags. The words and benediction were spoken. The gunny sergeant then marched to the front and called the roll. The names of about five Marines in Oscar's platoon were called. These Marines forcefully proclaimed with a trace of guarded grief, "Present." Then the gunny yelled, "Private, First Class Martinez." Only silence. "Private, First Class Oscar Martinez." Only silence. "Private, First Class Oscar A. Martinez, United States Marine Corps." Still silent. Then the gunny barked, "Private, First Class Oscar A. Martinez, United States Marine Corps, killed in action by enemy attack, October 12, 2004. The gunny saluted, and then taps. After filing up, over 300 of us, one by one, gave Oscar our respect and love. The tribute was very much like Good Friday, when we individually go forward to the cross. It was emotional and tearful. I will never again experience Good Friday without remembering this service. Jesus had a cross rather than a rifle. Jesus has conquered and will eventually gather us all home. God is good all the time."
I can't hardly breathe myself. I'm going to have to breathe in through my nose and out my mouth so I can continue. That's such a powerful segment of the book, Father Ron, and there are many, many others like that out there. It's such an inspirational story of your journey through not only your faith, but also in, you know, in what was going on over there and is still going on. And I have to admit that I have a much higher regard, I'm not sure the word I'm looking for chaplains. I didn't realize what work that you did, and it's so impressive that you were able to do that, and that, you know, that you're coming back with your own baggage that you have to work through.
And you know what it is, what I also find, Dale, it's the parents and the family. When I write, sign a book, sometimes I say, "Beloved," and I'll say, "Thanks for taking the service, and thanks for your service as being the mother of a Marine, the brother or sister or a cousin or a friend." And continue, and in the journey, it's like, I was just there. All I did was witness it. And, you know, and I think God uses the weakest and the dumbest, and that's why I know that I was chosen for this. Not because I do anything, yeah, right. Except that, you know, the Marines love it if you pitch your tent with them.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, if had I didn't go out, some of the places, they wouldn't give me any credibility. But like there's a, you know, you see some of the pictures there, one of them is in the city of Fallujah, to accept them where they are, as they are. I have this gratitude at the end of the book that I'd like to share with you, because I really think it puts it into a little into perspective. I wrote this 12 November 2007, which is like 3 years ago today. I held a man figuratively and literally as he died.
Okay, we've only got about a minute to go, so...
Okay.
Sorry.
He was stretched out in the operating room like a crucified man on his back, guts hanging out. I had overwhelming love for this man whom I had just met. I was exhausted from the war, embattled, depressed, belittled, and frustrated. And in this darky moments, I have a sense of light. I can play Taps for you, one of the songs that I sang at some of the at the services when I was out there. And I do it even when I'm returning. And if you listen to the words, it's really powerful, if you don't mind.
I'm going to ask you to just hold off on that for a second. We're going to go out on that. And I want to thank Father Ron Moses Carmada for being on Veterans Radio today. And we'll have him back again because he's so inspirational and such a great opportunity to talk with somebody who's been there. So I want to thank you very much, and then I'm going to let you go. with TAPS, and we'll finish up the interview on that. Thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much, Dale.
We'll be talking to you soon.
God bless you.
Okay.
And I'll sing it first, then I'll play it.
Okay.
Thanks and praise for our days, 'neath the stars, 'neath the sun, 'neath the sky, as we go, this we know, God is nigh.
Expressed on this program do not reflect the views of Veterans Radio or your local station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.